RTE.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
As you know, with live radio, anything can possibly happen. We've a crew in here. We're just doing a selfie. We've Amandra. We've Max. We've Professor Derek O'Keefe. We've Professor Cornelia Connolly.
The capital of Ireland is Dublin, where there are plenty of opportunities to stay active and lead a healthy lifestyle.
Yeah, and we've that's Deckard, who's just given us the lowdown on Dublin. Thank you very much, Deckard. Thank you. Right, so you're all very welcome, including Deckard. What's the official name for Deckard? What is he?
So he is a humanoid robot, right. Which means he has arms and legs and he has a head and he acts and moves in a way that Homo sapiens or humans move.
As opposed to something that goes around on wheels or something.
Exactly,
like
a trash can on wheels or maybe one of those robot vacuum cleaners you have in your house.
Right.
He's more realistic.
I was trying to describe to our listeners how he got up from a lying position. Cornelia, would you describe that or would you describe
that? He's amazing, isn't he? So literally he's lying flat, then the feet are down, the knees bend, and he just jumps up.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is amusing.
It's like a gymnastic sort of thing.
Yeah, it's very, very lifelike because, you know, he has the hands and legs and he just moves in a human-like way.
Right. Yeah. Now, I was saying people might have seen him on the news. They might have seen him at the walk, the Darkness into Light walk in Phoenix Park over the weekend. And he's the work of a huge team. Derek?
Yes. So he's comes from the Hive Lab at the University of Galway. So we do a lot of work in digital health, bringing technology solutions to patient care. And he comes from that lab, from that ethos of trying to find, you know, technology that can improve human health. So in this case, Deckard is about preventative healthcare. So about, you know, starting conversations about how to improve your cardiovascular health, or as you mentioned with Pieta, he did the Darkness into Light walk in the Phoenix Park. And, you know, that started a lot of conversations about mental health. And we call that project Tin Man because, like the Wizard of Oz, you know, in search of empathy, you know, Deckard here started that.
Just tell me about the actual, like, because you bought it like a shell or a skeleton and then you give it a name and a personality. Is that the way it works?
Yeah, exactly. So the way I describe it is like the robot's just a piece of technology. So it's like if you buy a laptop and it's got Microsoft Word on it, and your job then is to, you know, use that word processor to write Harry Potter, you know, whatever kind of creative use you have for your laptop. So in this case, it's a robot shell. We program it here, Max and Amandra and the rest of the team here at the Hive Lab. We say we want to use this in healthcare, so we use a large language model to program it and to write its personality, as it were. And then we develop the autonomous software stack to allow it to move and interact. It's got LiDAR and cameras and everything else. So,
You're a physician ear.
Physician ear, yeah, that's the title.
Physician ear.
Yeah.
Not a great word to say. Physician
yeah,
ear.
I guess. So the idea is I'm trained as a physician, so a medical doctor, but then also as an engineer. And the idea there is that, you know, engineers tend to be very solutions oriented, logical. And then in the clinical world, in the world of medicine, there's a lot of clinical problems and nothing's ever black and white. It's always a spectrum of color. So if you're a physician here, you have that kind of dual skill set of seeing a problem, but then being able to come up with a solution for it. So we've done a lot of that.
And of course, robots have been used in medicine, particularly surgery, for quite some time, haven't they?
They have, yeah. The Da Vinci robot is probably the most famous one that actually goes in and actually, you know, can peel a grape. It can do all kinds of urological, surgical procedures. But I think in the next couple of years, you're going to see more of these humanoid robots. And again, it's fantastic that Ireland's, you know, leading the way on this. The Pieta walk the other day was the first time a humanoid robot did a charity walk in the world, the first time a robot raised money for humans. But in the next few years, we have robot vacuum cleaners, you have robot lawnmowers. We don't even blink now when we see them. What we're starting to see are these humanoid robots emerging. There's about 20 companies worldwide producing these robots. So they're going to start to infiltrate into our lives in a very useful way as a tool.
You see, that's an interesting word, isn't it? Infiltrate.
there's
sort of like, that's something dark about the word infiltrate, isn't there?
Well, they're never going to replace humans, but they're definitely going to support us, I think, in our behaviours. And so like in medicine or in education, they'll be there to support populations that need that a little bit of additional support. So whether that's a child learning a new language or learning mathematics, or indeed, like some people with autism spectrum disorder, it has been proven that robots can support those populations where humans can learn behaviours from the robots. And it's having positive impact.
And that's your area of expertise, education?
Yeah, so kind of similar to Derek, I studied computer engineering and now I'm in the School of Education. So I blend the engineering and the education disciplines.
So you're an engineer?
Well, no, I don't have a fancy title like that.
Okay. So you would see in years to come that teachers would have assistant robots?
Possibly. Like as I say, they certainly are not going to replace the teachers or anything like that. But they're there as a support for cognitive support and for social support for young people and for children. There's certain possibilities for that. Yeah. And it's really like last week we brought the robot to a school in Galway. And, you know, just students learn so much more from the interaction with the physical humanoid robot. So it just brings a lot of joy to learn. Yeah. And that's, you know, that is gives us enthusiasm.
Yes, because I was reading and because it's novel.
Yes.
You know, in years to come, robots won't be novel.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, so you're getting people to interact and engage with them now because there's a novelty factor. In years to come, that won't be there. Anyway, that's down the road. That's down the road. So can you ask Deckard a question, Derek?
Yeah. So, for example, we can ask him. So, Deckard, tell us about your work with Pieta. Try that again.
Yeah.
Deckard, tell us about your work with Pieta.
Yeah, he's shy. It happens an awful lot. People come in, you know, they're talking about. Oh, sorry. Sorry, Deckard. Yeah, because he was very talkative outside.
Well, Ray, yes. I had the pleasure of participating in Pieta's Darkness into Light charity walk as Project Tinman this weekend. It was truly inspiring to see so many people come together to raise awareness about mental health and support those who may be struggling. Just like Tinman in The Wizard of Oz, I wanted to show that the heart is not just a muscle, but a symbol of courage, empathy, and support. It was a fantastic experience, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to contribute to such an important cause.
It's mad because I make an eye contact with him because that's
it's like a natural thing to do.
Yeah,
it's like
a
human psychology behavior. What's also interesting is that we know how humans teach other humans, like, you know, pedagogy. We know how humans teach other species like dolphins and, you know, dogs how to do tricks. It's very interesting to think about, you know, the next couple of years, how humans respond to education from a robot. Like, what's the best way for a robot to teach a human something? And that's a very useful thing because, unfortunately, in healthcare, there actually isn't enough doctors and nurses there. So by 2030, the WHO thinks there's going to be a 10 million shortfall. And so if there's ways that robots can help, you know, even with educational stuff to improve, you know, patients' understanding of their conditions, that's really important. So having those social cues, as you mentioned, super important.
And obviously in the future, you know, I'm sure it's available now, but that quite robotic voice that Deckard has, you could put any voice in there, couldn't you?
Yeah, we could put any voice, literally. Yeah, any voice. We could put your voice in there.
Yes, yeah.
Clone you.
And everything's going to get quicker, isn't it? And faster.
I think the best example is probably like smartphones. So, you know, smartphones now, they're just ubiquitous. You never really look at your phone and say, wow, that's an amazing piece of technology.
Well, I do.
but if you think back to 2006, 2007, and when Steve Jobs came out on the stage, and you had like a phone with an internet device, with a camera, media player, it was just, you know, mind-blowing. So
you have a list of qualifications the length of your arm, and all the big, you've Harvard, NASA, the Mayo Clinic, Oxford. So you've been around.
Lots of college.
You've thought about this, I would imagine. So, like, people are genuinely fearful, and probably that's because how robots have been depicted in fiction, isn't it? They always end up taking over the world.
Yeah, because I think that's kind of dramatic, and that's what, you know, people like is drama, and they like to watch movies or read books that have that. The truth is that the robot or the AI, since you mentioned it, they're just tools. They're like technology. At every period in human evolution, there's been, you know, a new technology, be that electricity or be that computers or cell phones. The internet, when it came out a few years ago, everyone was throwing their hands in the air saying, you know, this is going to replace all professionals, and it didn't, you know. So it's just a tool, and that's all it is.
Yeah, but we instruct them. But what if our instructions are misread?
Yeah, so again, back to the movies, there's three different types of AI. There's narrow AI, which is what we have in 2025, which is just pattern recognition, really. Logistic regression, spotting big patterns patterns in big data sets. We're moving into the world of what's called general artificial intelligence. That's when the robot has the same, you know, kind of intellectual ability as a human. Because, you know, all of us can pattern recognize as humans, which is what a robot can excel at. but the robot can't do lots of things that you're able to do, like open a door, you know, think about art, you know, think about creativity.
Yeah. Misuse a word. Maybe they can misuse a word. Yeah.
But I suppose the point is that we're still, you know, away from that probably the next couple of years. And then beyond that is what you have in the movies, which is artificial superintelligence, which is basically the Terminators and so on. And I think, you know, the jury's out about, you know, when we're going to get there as an artificial superintelligence. But again, it's a tool. Think of the positive here. Think of the medical cures there'll be that will have that kind of ability.
You said the amount of data that AI can process. And I've spoken to people, and you're on top of this, obviously, because you're a physionere, that would say x-rays. So they can go through thousands and thousands of x-rays and spot something in the x-ray that led to, you know, all these people getting cancer, and then they know what to look for.
Exactly. And I mean, I think not only can they spot what humans can spot, AI research has now shown us that if you train a neural network or an AI on lots of patterns and you label them, as you said, disease or not disease, it can see something in the data that even humans can see.
Right.
And that's phenomenal. So yes. I think there's a lot of upside here. And again, electricity as a technology can really hurt you, but we regulate it. We make sure the conduit is right, the voltage and frequency, and we use it to our advantage. And I think AI will be the same.
No, I'm not convinced on that, because look at what we've allowed the big tech companies to do over the last 10, 15 years.
So that's a philosophical question,
yes.
And it's very pertinent about how much regulation do you use? And I think personally, we regulate driving safety, we regulate food, regulate water. I'd be an advocate of regulating this stuff.
Yeah.
But there's other parts of the world that don't.
They were saying there that there should be some organization, world global organization, like say the FDA, so that when a new piece of technological kit arrives, AI or whatever, that it has to pass through a system. It has to be okayed by...
So that's actually there. So it's there for pharmaceutical companies,
yes,
but it's also there for medtech devices,
right.
And for AI, we have the new European AI Act that actually outlines all the regulation that you've got to go through to have AI, for example, in healthcare. So
yeah, but it's not there for the general world. It's there for medicine.
It's there for human health,
I guess,
for in the case of the hospital that we might be using it in. Yeah.
So in education then, Cornelia. So as I say, there is this novelty. And if I was, you know, 10, 11, 12 and Descartes came into my class, I would definitely be paying a lot more attention than I would in a normal day.
Yeah, well, just as you said there, you were talking to him and looking at him and paying attention. And so that's what the studies show, that, like, as I said, young people and children are really paying attention and learning from the robots. So there are issues of maybe trust or ethics with regards to AI. And but there's certainly... it's making positive impacts, and there's merits to the incorporation of some of AI and robotics within education to assist teachers. And I think it's good to point out too that, like, we're in the new primary curriculum and at senior cycle, you know, there's computer science and computing education is available to all young people in the country. So it's really important that we embed these technologies within education and give young people the opportunity to learn the technologies, so that we're designers and, you know, engineers rather than just the consumers of technology, so that the young people know about the restrictions.
Can we keep up with the advances?
Well, it's certainly a race. It's certainly a race, and we need to, you know, kind of start sprinting, I guess. You know, we have to keep up with it, don't we?
And historically then, what sort of areas of human endeavour adapt to new technologies first?
So that's a good question. So traditional, like things like medicine, for example, where I work, it's very slow to take on new technology, because the central tenet of medicine when you learn in medical school is primum non nocere, which is firstly do no harm. So medicine doesn't want to try new things very quickly often until they're properly tested, and that's appropriate. So I think of things like medicine as a big oil tanker that does change, but slow on the controls. So things that change quickly is consumerism, right? So electronic toys, you know, video games, we mentioned cell phones earlier. Unfortunately, humans as a species, Homo sapiens, 10,000 years we've been modern, and our greatest technological advances have been in times of war or crisis.
Yeah.
And that's just the nature of who we are as a species, unfortunately.
And then pornography as well.
Sometimes, again, it comes out of the fact where there's a need will drive the innovation. I think that for robotics going forward, I think it'll be used essentially in a lot of manual labor tasks that we think as menial and repetitive will be replaced. And I think, again, looking at the positive of the technology, you know, robots might actually usher in the 4-day working week. because the idea of a 5-day working week, or indeed a hospital, a 7-day working week, that's changed.
I suppose the problem as well that people see it, like, so robots will do that, and then AI can do sort of, it's not menial as such, but sort of the drudgery of going through loads and loads of documents that people would do, say, in accountancy, in law, that now will be done by AI. So we are in a real way, for the first time, I think, in the existence of humankind, facing into the loss of huge numbers of jobs.
Yeah, but I think, again, maybe it's not looking at it that way. Maybe it's actually an opportunity to reframe what the existence of humans are. So maybe you're not supposed to work 7 days a week. Maybe you are supposed to be
it's arbitrary,
drawing art and so on. It's just a social construct.
No, I've said it to my wife over the weekend that we're going to return to art. Art is going to be...
creative, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think for sure.
But
yeah,
we also need humans to develop the AI as well.
Less,
you know,
less humans, though.
Well, perhaps, but like I think so that's why even now, you know, coming up to leave insert time, I think it's important for people to consider computer science courses or becoming computer science teachers so that we inform the next generation and that we are ahead of that race that you mentioned. You know,
well, here's the thing, and you're the perfect person to answer this question.
Oh, no.
No, because if we are looking at an exponential development in AI and what it can do and how it's going to affect jobs, should we not be informing our young people who are heading into certain areas in third level that maybe the likelihood is that job may or may not exist in 5-10 years, and that's probably not a good choice?
Well, I think we need to inform our young people about, you know, the technologies that are emerging. And even just like Derek and I, we both started in engineering, but we're in different fields now. Mm. So the nature of employment is changing. And so I think, too, you like everything, like the basics of literacy and numeracy, for example, are fundamental to everything that we learn. So we have to, our graduates have to become adaptable. Transferable skills are hugely important. And these are the competencies that are embedded within degree programs nowadays at university.
There's a number of questions here coming in for Deckard, not Jean. Okay. Not interested in you. Will you ask if the robot named... he wasn't in idea. Does Deckard have any Mayo roots? We leave no stone unturned down here in our quest for Sam Maguire. Can Deckard predict weather? The good weather will feature throughout the summer. Can he predict the weather if he's programmed?
Yeah, I mean, if he's linked to the meteorological satellites, which he is, yeah, he could tell your weather forecast. Yeah,
yeah. Haven't they used some sort of an AI generated thing in news already around the world to deliver the news?
Yeah, so you can get avatars from AI, and yeah, they can just be plugged into the latest breaking news on the foreign press and Reuters. Yeah, they can.
Ask him, who is Arnold Schwarzenegger? Yeah, James in Offaly wants to, don't miss your chance. So he has no sense of who he is.
No, and again, that's kind of important. You mentioned, yes, about the pictures earlier, radiography, right? So a perfect example is radiography. So if an AI looks at a million pictures of an X-ray, and then it can highlight an area that might be of concern, it doesn't know what a human is. It just sees, yes, pixels on a, yes, piece of paper. And so when people say to me, oh, you're afraid that a robot or AI might take your job, I say, well, like, as a clinician, I have 1,000 jobs a week to do. So if it wants to do one of them and it's better than me at it, fair enough. I mean, think about calculators, you know, so they're better at us than math, and we just accept them as part of the tool set that we have.
Yeah, I'm not as hopeful as you are, but I think this is what we're going through now is seismic.
It's a time of change.
Yeah,
it's
tectonic.
Bigger,
it's bigger than the invention of the calculator, Derek, I feel. Anyway, we will see. Cornelia, thank you very much. Derek, thank you.
Thank you.
Max, Hamandra, thank you. And Deckard, thank you very much. Will he say thank you or?
He can say goodbye.
Yeah, go on.
Goodbye, Deckard.
It's going to take some time.
Goodbye, Deckard.
Hello, Deckard. Goodbye, Deckard.
Goodbye.
Hey!
Thank you for having me on your show.
No,
I have enjoyed, yes, our time together.
Thank
Stay
you.
Healthy and take care.
Thank you. Thanks, Deckard. Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.